Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Ganey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing the latest installment in the John Wick series, John Wick Chapter 4. Does not have any subtitle after that or anything. It's just no. John Wick Chapter 4. So
sweet and simple.
Yeah, yep. So the next chapter in the John Wick franchise. So we will be discussing that today. Of course, Keanu Reeves starring in the lead role once again as John Wick. So give you all our thoughts on that coming up in just a few minutes. But first, we have to talk about somebody that we've talked about on the last two episodes and once again on this episode, but not for a great reason. That is Jonathan Majors. Jonathan Majors was arrested this past Saturday. And there's been a lot of stuff that has come out since that arrest. His lawyer has made some statements as well. It seems like maybe it was, at least from what you've researched, Katie, and what I've been able to read, a little overblown to begin with, and maybe not quite as serious as people were making it right when it happened or right when the news first came out. So
yes, I will say this story is very sketchy is really the best word I can use. It seems like all the reports are different. I went to NPR.org because I feel like NPR is a reliable source of information. And I worry about this because I always want to take any kind of assault allegation seriously. But at the same time, it also sounds like this woman might have some severe mental health issues. So this could have also been fabricated. Who knows? But here are my main takeaways from the article I read. The woman did sustain injuries. That's true, at least by their reporting. He was already released on bail. He was already released without bail. Like, there wasn't even a bail.
Okay.
And then his attorney says that he called 911 himself because he was concerned about the woman's mental health. So I don't know their connection. No one has said their connection to each other. I know that one of them's 33 and one of them's 30. We know it was a woman. And I think it was in her apartment or his apartment. It was in someone's apartment. But other than that, it doesn't seem like really any of the reports are very specific or consistent. So I would say for once in my life, before we start, you know, saying down with Jonathan Majors and take him out of all the movies and stuff, like maybe we should just wait until we find out more information. But I'm hoping it's either false allegations or blown out of proportion. But we'll
see. I think too, if you're like Jonathan Majors, like you're obviously the main villain in this whole next set of Marvel movies. Like, I don't think you would want to like screw that up, you know, just because that's a lot of financial gain, notoriety, all that. I mean, if Marvel has said, hey, we're making you a part of this next phase or whatever, and you're going to be pretty much the main part of it.
Right.
I feel like, you know, you would be very careful about what you did, you know, outside of work. So
yes, agreed.
Yeah. So we will wait and see until we get some more details on that. Maybe we'll have some more on our episode next week. But like you said, it's still kind of a lot of sketchy stuff, not a lot of really solid details at this point on exactly what happened. And
right.
Jonathan Majors has not made a statement either. It's just been his lawyer at this point kind of speaking for him and releasing some stuff. But I don't think he's actually said anything about it yet. So another news item is that You on Netflix was renewed for a fifth and final season. Now, this is a very popular show. It seems like five seasons is probably good for that show. I haven't watched it, but I've heard people like it.
Haven't watched any of it?
I have not. I have not watched You. No.
Well, obviously, this was my news bulletin, but I am excited about it. I do think it's a good time to end it. I think there's only so far you can take it, and some of the storylines have been so ludicrous. But the whole premise is interesting anyway. But everyone loves, I think it's more like many people, myself included, love Penn Badgley so much that we just really like the show and watching Penn Badgley. But I'm glad they renewed it at least. And I do feel better when you know it's the final season. It's way worse when it's a show you like, and then they just cancel it and you never have any resolution. So I'm glad to know it's the last one.
Yeah, that's like Succession this season. Like, this is the last season of Succession. But
right.
The actors did not know that when they filmed the season. They thought that there was going to be like possibly one more season. And then it came out afterwards. That this
I didn't
like
realize that.
Yeah. So they did not know, as far as I know, when they were filming it and shooting it, they didn't know that it was going to be the last season. So,
oh my gosh, that's terrible.
Tara Snook has come out and said some things about that, who plays Siobhan on the show.
Oh,
so,
also, I feel, speaking of her, there's like a baby boom right now in Hollywood. Did you hear Daniel Radcliffe and his girlfriend, Erin Darker, expecting?
Are they?
And,
okay.
Yes. And then also Sarah Snook is expecting, and I'm really excited for her. So I just think that's really cool. Happy for all these people.
Very cool. So,
and we all know I love Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
That's a callback to 18 episodes of the pod, if anyone else listens to those.
Another big news item is that Harry Styles was in Tokyo and was seen making out with Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah. So do you hear my heart breaking over here?
Yeah, years and lots of, you know, girls around the world probably.
I don't like this, Jared. I know you didn't ask my opinion, but I'll give it to you. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Emily's been seen with a lot of people since her divorce. I fully support her divorce. Never liked her husband. Obviously, I don't know the man. I'm just basing it on things I've heard about him. And also, Emily is like, she really is, unfortunately, one of those beautiful people ever. But I just don't like the pair of her with Harry. And some people think it's a stunt, which I don't know. There's no rhyme or reason to why it would be or why it wouldn't be. But people have also said he's rumored to be with other people right now, too. So this could be a stunt to throw people off the scent.
Wasn't she with The Weeknd too? Or at least, was that ever confirmed? Or
I don't know. She did get with Eric Andre for a little bit. And then Pete Davidson.
Yeah, he's been with everybody. So
for sure, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. She's been around with a couple people. I don't mean around in a bad way. And I'm not saying this was judgment. I'm saying she's been spotted with a lot of people on a lot of dates, which is, she's perfectly entitled to be. But I don't get a good feeling about Imrata and Harry together. I don't like it.
Yeah. Also, mentioning The Weeknd, I forgot that he and Selena Gomez dated, one of the weirdest relationships.
They did. For a while.
Just feel like that would not have worked out very well, knowing both their personalities. So,
well, yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't. So, yeah, but they says they did it for 10 months, which is a pretty long time in Hollywood. That's like 7 years in Hollywood.
I thought it was about
a year. So,
yeah.
Yep. So, only other news item is that the new movie, Killers of the Flower Moon, is finally coming out. We have a release date for it. Finally. After all this time. It's going to be out in October of this year. So, Apple TV Plus distributing this one. $200 million budget. Huge budget. Martin Scorsese directed. Leo's in it. De Niro's in it. Jesse Plemons. Oscar winner Brendan Fraser. John Lithgow. So many people. So, yeah, it's going to be a pretty. It's going to be a big contender for Academy Awards. I feel like with that cast and with what it's based on and who's directing it and all that stuff. So,
well, and I read it at the beginning of last year, trying to hurry it along so I would be ready when it came out. And clearly, I did not need to rush to read that. But the book is excellent. I talked about it on the podcast. I don't even know what episode, but the book is excellent. If you're interested.
I thought I read this, but now looking at it, I don't think I did. I read Devil in the White City, which I get confused with this one.
Well,
for some reason,
I know why you probably get that. Also, I read that. Also loved that. That's about H.H. Holmes, the serial killer. And Leo has also been associated with that. And then they talked about Scorsese. That's the one that, like, they have not finalized anything about it.
That's like, the one that might be like the TV series,
a mini-series,
right?
Or,
yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's another separate thing. So, but Killers of the Flower Moon will be out in October, on October 20th. So,
can't wait.
Yes. Select Cinemas on October 6th, going wide on October 20th. And then we'll be streaming on Apple TV Plus at some point after that. So. Okay. So there's all of our news for today. So no corrections on this episode. And now we do have our recommendations. I don't have a ton of recommendations this week, but Ted Lasso, first episode was good. Succession, I'm almost done with the first episode. Pretty solid. That's what I've been watching, obviously, two of my favorite shows. So they're back for new seasons, final seasons for both of those shows. A lot of my shows are final seasons this year. Barry is having its final season. Yeah. A lot of stuff's ending. I don't know what I'm going to watch after this year because all the shows that I watch are coming to an end. So we'll have to wait and see. But that's the first episodes of both of those were pretty solid. So
excellent. Well, I have been a TV watching fiend this week. I do need to watch more movies, but let me tell you. So I watched, and also partly it's because people are now not doing that binging model. So they're letting out a couple episodes at a time. That's another reason I have multiple things on here. So Love is Blind season 4 came out on Netflix. What was nice about this is I didn't even know it was coming. And I was so excited to see that it was in my queue. Some of the people this year are straight up diabolical. Jared and I talked a little before we started recording, so I know he hasn't watched the first four episodes, so I don't want to ruin it for him. I'm just going to tell you, some people are like so evil that I don't know if they're real, if they're like actors or like real people. And so, yeah. And I have hope. I have hope for one couple so far, which is not, that's not great odds.
No, not really.
But I feel great about one couple. So I've been watching that. So they're releasing episodes every week. I think the next installment is the 31st this week. Then also another one I didn't know was coming around the corner, but it showed up on my Peacock app is The Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip Thailand. Again, it's on Peacock. So what they do, I've watched the other two seasons of Ultimate Girls Trip, but what I like, they take housewives from all sorts of different cities and seasons. So it's not like all the same season. It's not even people that have to be current. And it's people from everywhere, like Potomac, Miami, New York, New Jersey, OC, whatever. And they put them all together and then they go on like a week or 2 week long trip and then they film it.
And it's, oh, very
and
cool.
So this one is Thailand. And this one's interesting because I only am familiar with two of the housewives because there's like three cities I've consistently watched. Beverly Hills, OC, and New York. And I only know two of the women. The other ones I've only heard about. So I'm kind of getting, it is really nice because you kind of get to know other housewives that you, you know, might not really care about or want to watch their seasons. That might sound like crap to you all, but it's definitely, definitely a guilty pleasure show for me and I like it. So they released the first three episodes of that. And then lastly, Jared, I started Peaky Blinders. Already watched the first season, which if you're like, that's crazy, it's only six episodes. So that was basically a heavy laundry day that I was doing and working around the house. And I would like take a break and be like, I'm going to watch 50 minutes of this and watch an episode. It is so much better than I thought because I had tried about 2 years ago. I tried to watch one episode, the first episode. And I think if you don't sit and pay attention or go to the second episode, you don't really, it doesn't grab you.
Yeah, I've watched the first episode like twice now, I think. And yeah, I have not watched. I guess I just need to go on to the second one and give it a little bit more.
It definitely,
more. Yeah,
okay. It was one of those where I was like, by the end of the second episode, I was like, ooh, well, I got to know what happens now. But the nice thing is every season I already looked only at six episodes. So it's not the biggest commitment in the world. And I think there were six seasons and now it's done. So if you start it now, it's kind of the perfect show to start because you can see all the way to the end. So I'm in season two right now, but I'm really, really liking it. And nice. it's one of those shows there is violence, but it's not nearly as, it's not like John Wick violence. So it's controlled violence, if you will.
Also, speaking of Thailand, did you hear that's where the new season of The White Lotus is going to be set? They announced
that
today.
I did not.
Yeah.
I bet season a lot of people are going to start there. Going there. I have heard Thailand, Vietnam, some mm-hmm. of those places are stunning. So that's cool.
Yeah. Wow. So it'll be cool to see the scenery of Thailand on the new season of The White Lotus. So, okay, on to our review of John Wick Chapter 4, released on March 24th of 2023. Rated R for some language, but the main reason it's rated R is pervasive, strong violence, basically throughout the entire movie. So keep that in mind if you are going to see John Wick Chapter 4. 2 hours and 49 minutes. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on, I'm sure. IMDb score is 8.4 out of 10, so very high. Critics on Rotten Tomatoes, 94%. Audience, 94%. Both groups really enjoying this. Had a great opening weekend. Its first weekend at the box office, I think, did better than Lionsgate expected it to. $73 million so far when we're recording this, and we're recording it on the Tuesday after it came out, so it's been out four full days at this point. And then worldwide, $137 million. So it's done very well at the box office early in its run. The synopsis for this one is that John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table, but before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes. Also, this was supposed to be the last John Wick movie, but they have come out and said that due to the success of this one, they want to make another one. Yeah.
I had comments about it because I didn't know that until I was looking up things for like, oh, what's Keanu going to be in next? And it said John Wick 5. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So,
yeah, they're going to do something with that. And they're trying to figure out what they are going to do with John Wick 5, which I don't know if we need John Wick 5. I thought this wrapped it up in a pretty nice way, which we'll talk about you know, later in our likes and dislikes. So, but yeah, I'm very interested to see what they're going to do for John Wick 5. So this is directed by Chad Stahelski. He's got a really interesting story. He started as a stunt performer and he was the double for Brandon Lee on the movie The Crow. And then when Brandon Lee unfortunately passed away, he filled in for him and he has stunt credits in 77 movies. And he's directed all the John Wick movies, and he has 11 upcoming directing projects. So,
isn't
think that works
crazy?
Yeah, that is wild. So,
I do think that his background in stunt work made him a perfect choice for this franchise, though.
I think that definitely does help for sure in the fact that since he's done so much stunt work, directing a movie that has a ton of stunts in it, you can definitely tell that like he's experienced with that type of stuff. So,
yeah.
So we will take a break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for John Wick Chapter 4. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about John Wick Chapter 4. This movie, of course, starring in the lead role playing John Wick. That would be Keanu Reeves.
Jared, I would love it if you would hit the crush alert button, please. Thank you, sir. Keanu Reeves, okay, it's not the same vibe as like Michael B. Jordan or Chris Pine for me, but I think Keanu might be one of the most wonderful human people in Hollywood that's ever lived. And I also think this is a hot take, Jared, but I've given this, it's not a hot take because I gave it some thought, but I think he gives Tom Hanks a run for his money. I think they're like neck and neck.
Really? Okay.
For nicest guy in Hollywood. I would actually argue Keanu might even be a little nicer, really. But man, I love Keanu Reeves. And he is handsome. He just doesn't do it for me in the same way as like a Chris Pine. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much for the crush alert. So Keanu Reeves, he is best known for The Matrix, Point Break, Speed, The Matrix Reloaded, The Matrix Revolutions, and The Matrix Resurrections. And who could forget when he voiced Duke Kaboom in Toy Story 4? So good. That's just because that's one of my favorite characters he's done. He already has 6 upcoming projects, including, like we just mentioned, John Wick Chapter 5, which I wrote, Constantine 2, and Ballerina, which is a John Wick spinoff starring Ana de Armas.
Interesting. Also, you have to say her name, Ana de Armas. Like, Ana, you know, Armas. whisper voice it, yeah.
Mr. President. Yeah.
Did not win the Oscar. Shocking.
Did not win. I know. Wow. Next up, we have Donnie Yen. He plays Kane. He is originally from China. He is also a proficient pianist and gifted in martial arts, which I think is obvious from the film. You can tell. Donnie is best known for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, Mulan, that's the live action one, and the Ip Man movies. Next up, he will be in Sleeping Dogs.
Very nice.
Then we have Bill Skarsgård. Bill, I have to look this up every single time we do a movie about Bill Skarsgård. I always forget if he and Alexander have the same parents, because I mean this in the kindest way. I look at Bill and I look at Alexander and I go, well, clearly there's a different parent. Like there's no way. Apparently, yes, there is a way. They have the same parents. I just feel like they look related, but so different. And Alexander is so good looking, that, yeah, I'm just confused by it. But Bill's not bad looking. It's surprising to me is what I'm saying. Anyway, he is, of course, the son of Stellan Skarsgård. And if anyone's wondering too, Alexander is the oldest of the kids. Okay, Bill Skarsgård, he plays the Marquis in this movie. He's the villain. He is a Swedish actor best known for playing Pennywise in It and It Chapter 2. He was terrifying in those roles. He was also in Deadpool 2, The Devil All the Time, and Barbarian, which I know Jared gave rave reviews this past year. Next up, he will be in Nosferatu, Emperor, Boy Kills World, and The Crow. How crazy is that that we mentioned Chad Stahelski and his affiliation with The Crow, and they're remaking The Crow, which so weird.
Is wild, yeah.
Yes. Also, sidebar, you all, we can message each other while we're recording, and Jared said, forgot we're going to talk about Chris Pine a lot next week. Yeah, prepare yourself, because Chris Pine and Reggae Jean Page are both in that movie. Reggae is Arjun's doppelganger, so just get ready for Dungeons & Dragons. The only reason
Honor
I'm seeing that movie,
thieves.
Yeah, that, the only yeah. reason I'm seeing it is because those two are in it. I don't know a thing about the game. People play it. I don't know. Whatever. I'm just going to stare at them. Already bought my tickets. Can't wait. Back to this movie, John Wick 4 also has a fantastic cast of men, also starring Ian McShane, Lawrence Fishburne, the late Lance Reddick, may he rest in peace, Hiroyuki Sanada, Shamir Anderson, and Clancy Brown.
There we go. That's a cast for John Wick Chapter 4. So,
yes.
We'll talk about our likes first. Obviously, because that's what we do. But I think the big thing with the John Wick movies that stands out, as opposed to maybe some other action movies, is the locations.
Yes.
And specifically, the way they use those locations. I had a like that I think the lighting in these movies is always really cool in terms of how they light the different set pieces. Mm-hmm. And in this one, you have a lot of different ways that they do that. Sometimes with just like LEDs. Sometimes it's, you know, in the final sequence, it's the sunrise. They do it in a lot of different ways. But I think if you see like a still photo from a John Wick movie, you're like, oh yeah, that's a John Wick movie. You can just tell somehow, just due to the way that the sets are and the locations and everything. So, and in this movie, obviously they go a lot of different places. They go to Japan, they go to Paris. They're kind of all over the place in this one.
Really good point, Jared. The locations were one of my favorite things of the whole thing. I know that wasn't a really great sentence, but I adored the locations, and it was really cool to see like Japan and then Paris. I thought that was a really good, very good different locations, but also both very cosmopolitan, very famous. Of course, Paris, I was beside myself, so excited. It was like watching Emily in Paris again, because everywhere they went, I was like, oh, I've been there. I know exactly where they are. Oh, yes. And there was one point, because we saw it just last night, so it's very fresh in my mind, where they were standing, where they go to Sacré-Cœur, and where the corner where he was talking to, I think to Ian McShane, oh, maybe it was Kane, but he's talking to one of them and he's standing there. And I was like, we stood right there. Like, I know exactly where he's at, and we took a picture there. So I just thought it was very cool. And it also made me laugh too. Like when there's a huge car chase around the Arc de Triomphe, and that, first of all, I could so see like 18 car accidents happening there, because the cars, it was terrifying. And we went there at night, which was cool because that they were there at night. And so that's exactly how I saw it too. But it was neat because all these cars are terrifying, racing around that fast, and they don't have lanes. They don't do like we do here. So it's just willy-nilly, but everyone there is so used to it, and they're really pretty good at driving, and like they're used to that kind of maneuvering. But man, if you made one false move or went the wrong way or drew a gun and started killing people, like it would cause quite a ruckus. And it definitely did in the film. But the locations were stunning. And it was it reminds me a lot of James Bond, which I love James Bond.
Yeah.
And that to me is a big appeal of James Bond to me always has been the locations.
Another like is the soundtrack. And I was just going to say, too, the sound in general. Sometimes in action movies, for whatever reason, you cannot hear dialogue very well. Mm. But in this movie, did not have that problem in the theater that I was in. I could hear everything very clearly. It seems like sometimes action movies just, you know, for some reason, they forget about that part of it. And they just focus on the big explosions and gunshots and everything. But I thought this was very well, you know, sound edited and mixed. I thought sounded very good as a whole. And then, like you pointed out, Katie, the soundtrack is really fits for all of these movies. So
yes. Yep. And a lot of the songs I know, but it's not really music I'm listening to all the time, but every song that came on, I was like, oh, this is perfect for what's happening in this moment. And I think it takes a special kind of person too, to like a sound engineer to say, this is the song that we need here. And to have that breadth of knowledge too, to know what songs will fit where. So that was really good for me. Yes.
I like too that in the action sequences, not everyone had music associated with it. Some did, but some didn't. And I thought that made them stand out a little bit more as well. If it was like a one-on-one fight, usually it didn't have music, but if it was like a big, you know, they're fighting a bunch of people or he's fighting a bunch of people, normally it did. So I thought that was interesting.
Another thing, I forgot to put this in here, but I haven't talked about this in the last few movies. I was really impressed with these suits. Not John Wick suit. Well, I liked John Wick suits a lot, but I was so impressed with what they put Bill Skarsgård in. If you looked, I mean, the tailoring on those suits was spectacular. All the little like accoutrements that they put, like the little brooch pins, all of his glittery suits, like the fabric. I don't know what they made that of, but it was stunning and just beautiful craftsmanship. I was really impressed.
Yeah, his suits that he wore were great. Donnie Yen's suit was really good.
Yes.
Yeah, so as Kane. So yeah, lots of good wardrobe in this movie. So
yes.
Another like, of course, for the John Wick movies, this is throughout all of them, is the stunt work, the stunt choreography. It's very cool. I would say in this one, they do a lot of action sequences with a lot of different things, which makes them like stand out. Like I said, some are one-on-one, some are big group things. Katie mentioned the big car chase type thing that happens around the Arc de Triomphe. You know, there's fights with swords, there's fights with guns, there's fights with hand-to-hand combat,
nunchucks.
There's fighting with nunchucks, there's, you know, fighting in small spaces and in big spaces. So there's all kinds of stuff in this movie that they work in, and every action sequence felt a little bit different, which I think is good. I think that's what you want, because if you just do the same type of action throughout this whole movie, it would get boring. And I'm going to argue in the dislikes that I think you could maybe cut some of the action, which I know is a wild thing to say in a John Wick movie, but I had a few thoughts that maybe you could cut some sequences. But I think for the most part, the action sequences, especially that last hour, was really good in terms of the build up to the final action sequence.
Jared, I fully agree with you about the action sequences and cutting them, so we'll talk about it because I'm with you. The choreography, without fail, the stunt choreography was the most impressive thing about this film to me. There were some scenes that went on forever. I just thought no man would still be standing. No human being could withstand this. Like, there's no way you'd avoid this many bullets, this many stab wounds, this many anything. But I know that's the appeal. I fully get that that's the appeal of John Wick. But I was beyond impressed with the stunt choreography. I don't know who thought of it. I don't know how they have the ability. And it's interesting because I read somewhere this week, they were talking about adding stunts, like stunt double work, to the Oscars as a category. And I don't think that had anything to do with John Wick, but it just happened this week that I was hearing about it. So it's fresh in my mind. I would fully support them putting that as an Oscar category, because those people do not get enough recognition. And also, like, I would never want to be a stunt double. I think it's way too dangerous, but it's incredible what they can do. And I really think this movie should be recognized for the choreography and all the work that goes into it. And I loved the camera work around the stunts. Like, it was so interesting when they were heading to Sakrakura, they're in that part of Montmartre, which I knew that stairway that they were on, that was such a cool move to like be at the bottom of the stairs and watch all of this stuff from the bottom going up. And he just moved the camera around. And then I especially enjoyed when they were in the old, now this I couldn't tell, I couldn't remember if it was a museum or a house or what, but they stumble into this place that's old and maybe abandoned or getting worked on, renovated. But all these fight scenes that happen, all the camera work is above, like if you're sitting, it'd be if you were hanging on the roof or something, looking down like a fly on the wall or something, and you get to watch all of this, and the camera just moved as the fighting moved. That was really, really cool. And I feel like we don't see that a lot. So great job with this film.
Yeah, that was one of the first, maybe the first time I had seen something like that in a movie where it's like shot from the top down and going through that house. Yeah, that was a very cool sequence for sure. So I also wanted to point out, I thought the way they did Kane's action was cool as well. Obviously, he's blind, so he can't see, but they come up with some really creative ways that he's still very good at fighting and hand-to-hand combat, using sound. And in fact, one sequence, he puts these like doorbell ringer things in this kitchen, and he knows that from where the sound is coming from, that's where the bad guys are. So I just thought they did some really clever things with his action in particular in this movie that I thought were cool. And I thought the three different styles were interesting of action. Like John Wick's obviously more pistol, you know, type hand-to-hand type stuff. Kane is obviously more like swords, blades, martial arts type inspired. And then Mr. Nobody is more of just like a brawler. He has the big like shotgun. He has the dog. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool how they were all a little bit different. So
yeah. And on IMDb, his name is Tracker. But yeah, he said he was Mr. Nobody the whole time. But that you brought up a good point that I forgot to bring up. I really enjoyed how they did stuff with Kane, because you're right. It was interesting to see a person who was blind, how they would, I guess, like communicate and how they would fight, especially as like a hired hitman. Like, how would they do that? And the doorbell thing was so neat, because I didn't know if that was going to be like a bomb that he was attaching to things. I didn't know what was about to happen. So when it was a doorbell sound, I was like, that is genius, so that he knows people are coming. Yeah. And it was hard. Kane, I think for everyone, is supposed to be one of those people that he's like half villain, half good guy, and you're not really sure how you feel about him. But I think characters like that, it's so complex when they do that. And they wrote Kane very, very well. And he was one of my favorite characters by the end. Even if he did do some bad things, I really liked that character.
I did too. So, and then final like before we move on to dislikes, obviously this movie has a good plot for an action movie. It's pretty easy to follow in terms of what's happening. Good premise. Good world building as well. Bill Skarsgård was a great villain, which he normally is when he plays a villain role in anything.
He's just so creepy. He's like Paul Dano, just creepy.
Yeah, so he was really good in his role as well. And I liked, this is more of a spoiler, so I won't give the whole thing away if you haven't seen the movie, but I liked the final sequence as well between Kane and John Wick, kind of what happens there and how that there's a lot of drama during that sequence, a lot of tension. And I thought, you know, the whole movie's kind of building up to that. And the way that they executed it, I thought was really well done in terms of me as an audience member being really invested in what was happening in that final 15-20 minutes. So
yeah, I don't really have much more to add to that, but those were my thoughts about as far as like, it was good, especially for an action film. This movie was what I expected. It's kind of like Creed 3, but it was exactly what I wanted. I don't feel like, you know, I overpaid. I don't feel like I was cheated out of an experience. I definitely have some dislikes, but I feel like for the people that really love the John Wick series, I see why they love it. And I think this movie was successful. It was kind of like Top Gun Maverick. It gave everybody what they wanted.
So let's move on to dislikes now. This is a very long movie, 2 hours and 49 minutes. That's a really long action movie.
Really long.
And I think there's certain sequences that you definitely could cut from this movie in terms of, and I would cut some of the action sequences. I know that sounds wild in a John Wick movie, but I think that action sequence in Japan, the first one really, Wah Cool, doesn't really have a huge impact on the rest of the story. I mean, that character never, it shows up again, obviously, because spoiler alert, he dies. His daughter never shows up again in the movie. I was just kind of like, this is kind of random to put this in here and then not have any reference back to it later on in the film. And it took like 20-25 minutes. So that is probably what I would cut. And then some of the action sequence too, I think they're still in Japan at this point, where they're with that guy with the gold teeth, and or maybe they're in Paris at that point.
Berlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So the guy with the gold teeth, he has to go there and like, you know, kill him basically to become a part of this family so that he can duel at the end of the movie. But I thought that was a little long. That card game sequence was kind of weird. And I, you know, again, some more things that maybe you could cut out.
Need it.
So, and it was that one was a very long action sequence too. So,
yeah, you reminded me of something that I forgot to write down. So I'll mention that first. That, Berlin was cool, 'cause I had been there. The one thing I really didn't like about the Berlin scene, I also thought it was too long. I thought that absolutely could have been cut down because that guy wasn't a big deal. I mean, mainly he was like, and again, it's really hard for us at this point to talk without spoilers. So if somebody doesn't want to hear them, I'd advise turning this off and coming back later, please. But that guy was really just, he needed a body part to like prove that he had killed him. And I felt like that scene was so long for just, I need to kill this guy and take a souvenir back with me. But what I couldn't stand was they were in that club. There were people getting murdered left and right, and people were just dancing in this club. No one's bothered. I totally get being drunk or doing drugs and being like caught up in the moment, but it is very hard, actually impossible for me to believe that many people would be that unaware of that many deaths, bullets, murders going on and just not stopping what they're doing. Did you find that to be strange?
Yeah, it's weird how in this universe, like nobody in the general public like cares about what's happening in these crimes. So whereas I think things like James Bond, Mission Impossible, you do see sometimes the common folk, if you will, that are like, you know, at least screaming or running away from the action or, you know, something. So, but for them to just like obviously ignore it the whole time was wild.
Yes. And what didn't seem consistent to me was no one was reacting to the violence that was happening in this club. And then the next scene, we see them all running out like a bat out of hell because they're scared. And I thought, well, they weren't scared a minute ago. Like they didn't even care. So I didn't like that. But as far as the scenes, I absolutely think they could cut down the action scenes. And exactly where you, the first thing I thought of was in Japan, that fight. It was really beautifully done as far as like having all the artwork, like these historic museum pieces and things, shooting out the glass and stuff. Like all of that's really neat, but it went on far too long. I mean, I think it was probably 25, 28 minutes long, and I think it could have been 15 and it still would have had the impact it had. Same with the scene in Berlin. And the one that actually really drove me mad was in Paris on the stairs, because by that point I loved that scene. It was so good. And I even laughed when he fell down the stairs. Well, I wanted to cry, but then I was like, oh, that's funny. Cause Kane was like, I need you to get up. That was funny. But that scene, I thought, my God, how long has this movie been? Because I didn't realize going in that it was almost 3 hours. So that didn't help me at all. But I was like, man, I feel like we've been in here 3.5 hours. Like it felt like we'd been in there 3.5 hours at that point. And then everyone, if you've seen it, then you'll know what I'm talking about. Keanu gets to the top of the stairs because he's trying to get to Sacré Cœur, which is at the top of Montmartre. It's a huge hill. And he gets up these 220 stairs or whatever. And then one of the villains, who I just loathed that guy, pushes him down. He falls all the way down the stairs. And I was like, dear God, how much longer do we have? And it wasn't that I wasn't enjoying it, but I just thought like, dang, we didn't need this. Or you could have cut 20 minutes of other action sequences and kept this whole sequence.
Well, and I think too, like, so he has to get to the top for this meeting and they're going to do this duel at sunrise. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he's going to make it. Like in the back of your mind, you're like, there's no way he doesn't make it. So why are we like drawing this out so long? Also thought it was weird how like, you know, it's like midnight or whatever, and he decides to go out in public and just like take on all these bad guys, but he has to be at this duel at 6 a.m. I was like, if I were him, I'd just lay low,
get some sleep,
you know, wake up 5:45, take a taxi over there and, you know, do my thing. So I thought it was weird how he decided he was going to like, you know, go out and be publicly seen and, you know, deal with all those bad guys for the last hour.
And I'm not counting points off for this, but I didn't love that woman. I really liked the radio announcer that was like saying where he was, because she was giving away John Wick's location so people could try to kill him because there was a bounty for him. But I was, the whole time I kept thinking, who's reporting this to her? She would magically know, like, he didn't get killed at the Arc de Triomphe. So now if you follow him 2 blocks over, we know he's there right now. And I just thought, does this guy have a GPS tracker on him? Is there somebody filming him on YouTube, like an influencer that's reporting back to this news lady, radio lady? So that was hard for me to believe as well. I mean, it was a fun device as far as like keeping us interested and showing how these people knew where to get him. But I kept thinking, like, logically, how does this lady know where he is?
Yeah, that was kind of weird too. And you mentioned the pacing. I just found this article on Variety, but it was an interview that Chad Stahelski and his editor, whose name is Nathan Orloff, they did it with IndieWire. And they said the first cut was 3 hours and 45 minutes.
Oh my word.
So this is what Chad Stahelski said. He said, quote, to be really honest with you, zero was planned out. Our first cut was 3 hours and 45 minutes, and it felt like 3 hours and 45 minutes. We were like, oh, we're so screwed. So then they talked about how they edited it. And then he also said that every time the film lost even just 30 seconds of footage, he forced the post-production team to rewatch the entire movie again to make sure that it flowed. He said, sometimes you see movies and you see that they, you know, watch them in pieces and they didn't see it as a whole. So I thought that was interesting that they, every time they would cut, they would rewatch the whole movie again. They probably got sick of it by the end of it.
Yeah. Can you imagine those poor souls having to watch this that many times?
That's wild. So I could see every, you know, you edit for a couple weeks and you're like, let's watch it again.
Right.
Or you edit for a week and at the end of the week, we're going to watch it and see what we edit, you know, the whole thing. But it's weird that they, every single time they cut something, they would watch the whole movie again. Another dislike, this movie doesn't even care about the Bechdel test.
No.
There's no, so half the female characters don't even have names. There's like three in the whole movie.
Yeah.
None of them ever talk to one another. So,
I will dwell on it. It's just like, this is what I thought when I went home. I was just thinking, like, as much as, I support these movies. I love James Bond. I go see Marvel movies. But I am really, really tired of it. And I'll keep saying it because these are movies that are, like, not thought-provoking, not life-changing. They might be fun, but they're geared for men. And it's just yet another industry where men are still on top and we're doing things for men. And that drives me crazy. And there's a lot of women. Yeah, we have some female directors and we have Reese Witherspoon and other people have production companies. But like, we are clearly still making movies, the majority of them for men. And things like all this violence, I couldn't help but think yesterday while I was watching all this violence, how we'd heard news earlier in the day about a shooting in Nashville. Now, that was a woman, oddly enough. There's only been five, by the way, five mass shooters that were women in the history of the world. Okay, at least in America. But America's the only one that has this problem. So anyway, sorry, soapbox, but... I do think there's a correlation. We're seeing all this violence and we're seeing these stories being told and they're not really original and they're not really thought provoking. And that does drive me insane. And yeah, the women, we saw a really cool daughter of the, the Japanese man, like in Japan. That was cool. But we don't see her very long. We see a daughter that plays the violin. We see her for 30 seconds, maybe in one scene. And then we hear the radio announcer who's a woman. And that's the extent of women that are involved in the film. And then we know Bridget Moynihan, John Wick's wife, we see a flashback to her. That's it.
And I think this franchise does a worse job than other action franchises because like James Bond has female characters. Mission Impossible has female characters. Even The Fast and the Furious has some female characters that have been series the whole time. So there are action movie series that do include female characters, if not a couple of them, you know, in their movies. And this one just doesn't really have any at all. So that would definitely be sort of an area where it is lacking. So you can watch this movie without the other ones, but if you watch the other ones, you'll probably get a little bit better background. Like I couldn't remember if I watched John Wick 3 or not. So I watched a recap before I watched John Wick 4. And I think that helped me understand some of the things that were going on with the High Table. Things like that helped me understand kind of the lore and the backstory a little bit better going into this one, just watching that quick recap. Because I think I had seen John Wick 3, but it had been a while. So
I only watched this week. I watched John Wick 1, really liked it. I almost think I was more interested in 4 than in 1. But there were things I didn't get, like he's missing a finger. I had no idea why, because a couple people were missing the same finger and I had no understanding of that. Lawrence Fishburne, I knew he'd been in a couple of them. I had no idea because he wasn't in the first one. I knew Angelica Huston, she had been in a couple or at least one of them. She, you know, there's just things that I didn't get. I did understand Lance Reddick's character and Shane and Ian McShane. I knew the hotel, like the semblance of the hotel, those kinds of things I got, but there were things that I didn't understand, but I don't think it really detracted from the film. I'm just saying I can see how this built on a story that if you hadn't watched all four, you might be lost a little bit.
Let's see. Another dislike that I had is I just thought Keanu's delivery of his lines in this movie was so bad. It was like it was like he hadn't talked before or something. It was like he didn't have many lines anyway, but every time he would say a line, I was like, why are you talking like that? Like, did you get handed the piece of paper 4 seconds before you shot the scene and had to, you know, it was like every line he just didn't really deliver with any confidence or... It's just weird speaking tone too. I'm like, you don't talk like that, man. I know what you sound like. Like, why?
Well, he's capable of better as well. There was at one point, I actually thought I want to go back and start this movie over and count how many lines of dialogue he has, because I don't think it would have been more than 30 lines of dialogue the entire time.
Not much.
Film.
No.
Which that's to me also a bad sign. And again, not thought provoking, not difficult. This isn't like an actor's movie, which they don't all have to be. I'm just trying to point out this bigger problem that Hollywood has that drives me insane. And then my last dislike that goes along with that is like, to me, this is a movie that's just violence for violence sake. And I don't like that. And I'm not someone who has to look away. I don't like gunshots in the head. I don't like any slitting of anything, like with knives and stuff. But like, for the most part, I can deal with quite a bit of violence. And I didn't look away at any of this. But I don't like violence. And I do think that part of the me not having to look away is also showing I'm desensitized. Even me, a female who doesn't watch a lot of these movies, is like fully desensitized to what's happening. I think it's important to point out how graphically violent this is, that you couldn't get away with this. Cops wouldn't really look the other way for some rich white people, sure. But for the most part, like, this is just not the way the world works. And it is, that does ding the movie for me. Like, I don't like that this is the kind of film that is making $130 million in 4 days. That bothers me.
Yeah, the only time I had to turn away was when Mr. Nobody has to pull his hand out of the knife.
The hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
I almost lost
couldn't
it
look
then.
At that. But that, but you're right with your point. Is like, I don't know how many people are killed in this movie. 400, 500? I mean, it's some crazy
number. Pick 100 number for sure.
Yeah. And the fact that you can just sit there and watch it and be completely fine with it while people are getting slashed and shot and punched and all this stuff, you know, it definitely does say something. So,
yeah.
And I think these action, these movies too, unlike James Bond or Mission Impossible, really just rely on that. I think you realize it more in these because it relies so much more on hand-to-hand combat and like gun play, whereas Mission Impossible will have a car chase, or Tom Cruise will jump out of an airplane, or they're like the, you know, the last one, they're like defusing a bomb at the end of the movie, and there's not really any action that's happened. There's action, but there's not like, it's not like there's a big shootout at the end of the movie or something like that.
Yeah.
Like there is in these. So, and then like even the last James Bond, like same thing, like that that whatever is about to explode and he has to like get out of the building in time and, you know, save the rest of the people. So they do some things in some different ways that are action sequences that aren't just straight up, you know, shooting people for 25 minutes. So, okay, well, that's basically all of our thoughts on John Wick Chapter 4. Pretty good addition to the franchise. Definitely a solid action movie if you want to check out an action movie. And who's going first on this episode?
I guess I will. I'm just going to do it.
Okay, what's your score?
I'm giving it an 87.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I do think this is a movie that, even though there's plenty for me to dislike, I can't, as a movie and as entertainment, it's exactly what you expect and what you want. So I can't, it's not a bad movie. The things I didn't like about it are just like the violence. There's no women. There's really no life-changing story or things to think about. And it doesn't really feel like John even learns any lessons. You know, it's not like there's a line that he won't cross, or like, once he kills this many people, he's going to feel like his wife is like at peace. I just feel like, you know, there's not a lot of resolution. I don't love that. But as far as like a film that's entertaining and what I expected, yeah. And I did like it better than the first one. And I can see why it's a successful franchise.
So I am trying to look up how many people John Wick killed in this movie.
Oh,
but
I will
have an answer for you here in just a minute. So,
okay, cool.
But my score is going to be a 90 for this one. I'm going to go a little bit higher than you.
Okay.
I did like it. It's a good action movie. Probably the best action movie that I've seen since Top Gun Maverick, I would say.
Yeah.
That came out last year. So it's got some great sequences. It's got some really cool, action and a good story as well. So I'm going to give this a 90 out of 100. So
great. We're pretty consistent.
This, I'm still trying to find the answer. This article is very long.
Do they know?
So,
I feel like that'd be a lot of counting.
Yeah, it would be a lot of counting. Where is it? I'm still looking for it and I still don't see it. Okay. Well, I don't even know if it's in this article. So sorry. Oh,
no,
here we
fine.
Go.
Oh.
He has killed around 140 people in this movie, apparently.
I feel like 340.
I feel like it's got to be more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although at the same time, who knows how many he killed versus like the people around him. I don't know. There's a lot of bloodshed. And most of it's unnecessary. I'll say that.
Yeah. 100. Okay. Apparently it is 140, but that's still a ton of people. The total for the whole franchise is 439.
Wow.
So.
Just that few. Okay.
So there we go. That's our thoughts on John Wick Chapter 4. You can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver. Also, search us on Twitter and Instagram at the Silver Screen Podcast. Follow us there. And you can also follow our Letterboxd profiles as well. They're in the description for the show notes. So you can click down there, follow us on Letterboxd, see what else we're watching besides movies we're reviewing for the show. Or if you want to go back and look and see when did they score that movie again or how many stars did they give that, you can do that on Letterboxd as well.
Yes,
so,
you can.
At Podcast Silver on Instagram and Twitter. Search us on Facebook. You'll find our page there. On our next episode, we're going to be reviewing Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Did you know Chris Pine and Reggae Jean Page are in that?
Are they in that movie? So,
yes.
So
yes.
That'll be, it's getting good reviews so far. Early reviews are very positive. So we'll see how it is, but that'll be next week's episode, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.